God.
Oh, no, no, I'm not ready.
No, come on, man.
I love what you're doing. What are you talking about?
Okay, now you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right, go ahead.
Hello, and welcome to Dopey, a podcast about drugs, addiction, and dumb shit. And I'm Dave.
And I'm Chris.
I think Chris is up to something, so what are you up to?
No, I'm not up to anything. I just want to start with this email.
You want to just start with
the
email?
I had something I was going to do, but
here,
you
just
can't
do it. Just do your thing.
I just have some notes. And
okay, well, let's hear it.
One of my notes was about the voice memos, and Dave doesn't always listen to the voice memos. I usually listen to them. Dave does a lot of things that I don't. He does all the Facebook. I do none of the Facebook. To throw you your bone right there. But anyways, sometimes we play voice memos, right? And what Dave usually hasn't heard it. So we'll play the voice memo and Dave and I talk and then I layer it in later. And then the voice memo ends. And a lot of the time, Dave has absolutely no fucking clue what was said in the entire voice memo. But you comment on it. You literally heard one sentence at some point, and you use that one sentence to formulate your response to the voice memo.
Dude, how do you do school?
Are you going to defend yourself?
How do you handle school?
Yeah, but I don't respect school as much as I respect the Dopey Nation.
Listen, we all have our character defects and our problems.
Yeah.
And I have this, it's like, I don't want to blame it on attention and deficit disorder, but yeah. Something happens to me and I just can't pay attention. Well, I want to pay attention. I try so hard to pay attention.
Yeah.
And I pay attention to the Facebook messages. I'm actively engaged in those conversations. It's just the voice memo. I'm just like,
well, the reason you do that is because you can multitask with those. You can be doing something else and responding to Facebook. The voice memo, it's like you have to sit and listen to it.
What do you? So you're saying you listen and pay attention to everything?
Everything.
It's like, who are you? You're such a fucking hypocritical piece of shit.
I will say that when we get a voice memo that's 25 or 30 minutes, Dopey Nation, I can't listen to that whole thing. The only time I ever listen to one that's that long is if I'm driving and the mood strikes. It's like, I can't listen to a
30-minute voice memo. Listen to fucking 11 minutes. I can barely listen to 7. I want 7 the max. 4 the men, 4 to 7. I'll listen, I promise. Just make them short. What am I fucking doing? I'm listening to a book on tape over here? What am I doing? It's like, give me a break.
All right, I want to start with this email because we got to call somebody, all right? So we got an email from Jonah. It's short.
Wait, I want to say something before you do this. I want to tell a little story before.
Okay, but we need to get that in the email before the call.
It's really, it's a story about the purpose of Dopey.
Okay.
Okay? A couple weeks ago, it might have been a month ago, I took my wife's car to the Subaru dealership.
Okay.
And I love going to the Subaru dealership because at the Subaru dealership, you sit down in a waiting room. They've got little coffee machine. They make you coffee or hot cocoa or whatnot. And you sit there and I bring my computer and I bring my headphones and, you know, I just watch what I want to watch or maybe I'll communicate with the Dopey Nation on Facebook or maybe I'll read emails or write emails or work on something. It's me time.
Yeah.
And I can put on my headphones and I don't exist. But so I get there and they're watching whoever is on Live with Regis and Kathy Lee now, like Kelly and Ryan Seacrest, okay? And I loved Regis Philbin. Okay, I loved Regis Philbin.
Yeah.
Like I thought he, for me, for my money, my two favorite talk show hosts in the history
Regis
of the world.
Regis is Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Yeah.
Okay.
Regis and Howard Stern.
Is he still on then?
No, Regis is like dying.
My mom loved Regis and Kathy Lee, and then she didn't like the person that replaced Kathy Lee.
Kelly.
She stopped watching the show.
Regis, I loved.
He's very he seems pretty like humble.
He's just very likable. He's likeable. Very funny. He like makes jokes. He just makes
He'd
fun.
He'd be like what Bush would be if Bush was like not a good president, but he would have been a good like show host.
Right, he would have been. Yeah,
you know what
sure.
I mean?
Regis was so good, and Howard Stern, for my money, Howard Stern is the greatest. Like, but the point is, so I walk in and Kelly and Ryan Seacrest are on, and they're hosting their show. And they're sitting on the stage and they're talking about their vacation or whatever. Mm. And I'm watching this and all of a sudden I'm realizing what Dopey is. Mm. And Dopey is supposed to be that, but good for people who have dealt with addiction.
Yeah.
Dopey is supposed to be a talk show that keeps people company that has dealt with addiction, not some fake-ass piece of shit fucking thing. Regis was funny.
It's not even, it is true, because it's not even supposed to be. I mean, we have to have Dopey in every hour episode. I talked to Dave about this. We need 10 minutes at least of Dopey. And when I say that, I mean war stories, drug talk, you know, depravity.
Specific drug stories. But
we've gravitated away from, because it's not, we say in our tagline, 80% debauchery, 20% recovery. We're not really that. It's more like 80% shooting nothing. The shit,
yeah.
Nothing, you know, two addicts just talking about their lives and other people's lives, and then 20% of recovery and Dopey.
But my dream is for Dopey to be a morning talk show like Live with Regis and Kathy Lee or whoever these fuckers are,
so it'd be
but with us.
But Dopey with Dave and Dr. Chris.
Well, it would be Dr. Dave and Chris. That's what it would be.
Why Dr. David?
Because I'm not going to be Dave.
You're just going to be Dave.
I think it should be Dr. Chris and Coach Dave.
It's going to be Dave and clinical psychologist Chris.
Yeah. You're just like, it's so funny because you're going to just fade away. As soon as you, it's just, I look forward to it.
What do you mean?
It's going to steal
your
soul.
Have I faded yet?
You're fading.
How am I fading? I'm here and I'm present.
Here.
And we're putting out good product. Dave's panicking about the state of Dopey. And we literally got emails saying the last, not the most recent one, but the ones before. No, some people of the best episodes.
People really liked the last one, too.
Dave's like, it's failing. It's not working anymore.
No, but it's my neuroses is one of the anchors that keeps our ship sailing.
I agree with that.
Are you
but
kidding
we
me?
We both have neuroses.
And that, and that, those are the twin pillars of the Dopey Society.
Our neuroses.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually agree. I think it kind of works because of that.
Exactly.
All right. Let me read this fucking email, all right, before we call this guy. This is from
Jonah. But what's your neuroses?
I want Dopey to happen. I just the same as you. I just don't panic about it. It's me panicking like we need to get it done no matter what.
What's your – but like
Dave's neuroses is anything goes wrong and he's like, let's just end the show.
No, that's my
– it's over.
No, that's my need is like if something is bad, I want to destroy it before it destroys me.
And he does that, Dopey Nation. Dave at least 3 or 4 times has been like, fuck it. Let's just stop the show.
No, it's way worse than that. I'm like, it's over.
It's over.
I don't care. Fuck you. I'm done.
And you know what I've learned from like our history with that is when you go there, I just don't even like tango with it. I used to tango with it. It just gets worse. I just pull away for a half hour and usually you come to your senses.
I always apologize.
Yeah.
I always do a 10th step.
Yeah, but if I keep talking, it just gets worse. I just need to pull away for 30 minutes.
I love it when you used to panic.
I used to panic.
I love it.
I just don't even listen
to it. It was so enjoyable when you used to panic.
And it makes it worse when I panic. And then you're like, fuck it.
I'm like stepping. I'm like, yeah. Anyway, read the email.
All right. So this is a Dopey email. It's a higher octane deal. This is from Jonah. Hey, guys. Been listening since the 10th-ish episode. Huge fan. Love you guys. It's a great thing you're doing, even if it's just giving everyone something to look forward to every week like me.
Nice.
At the time of writing this, I'm pretty tweaked on meth, sitting in a Walmart parking lot, and I'm driving this girl around, boosting shit from stores so she can pay for her hotel and I can get some dope. I've been wanting to write you guys for like a year, but I'm really insecure about talking or being social at all when I'm not high. And he's writing this when he's high, so it's, you know, it's...
It's coming out.
It's right now. It's coming out. I'm teetering hard on the edges of recovery and saying, fuck it. I've had so many multiple month runs of clean time, but my shitty negative mental state always yanks me into bad temporary solution. I've seen addicts way deeper into addiction do more successfully than me, and I'm starting to think it's because the shittiness of being a little sick every now and then, being broke, and having a heroin habit does not outweigh my depressing, hopeless outlook on life and myself. I've never successfully IV'd anything other than missing one time and saying, fuck the needle, I will not come back from that, it's going to be too good and affordable at the start. Dave, I love your tunes and have jammed to the Filthiest Nation SoundCloud many times. You have an awesome taste in music, man. Let me know if you're hip to folk punk at all. If you want to reply or if by chance either of you read this dumb rant, just know you are loved and to keep on living the best you can no matter what.
Did I write back to him?
Did either of us? I wrote back.
I didn't write back?
Yeah, I think I wrote back.
What's his name?
Jonah.
Jonah, thank you.
But that's so true what he said. It's like, if your life, if you stop using and you're hopeless and depressed and life sucks, then being a little sick and being broke is might be better because you get some temporary relief. Like that's
is that what he said though?
Yeah, yeah. It's not Jonah. Your outlook isn't unique to yourself. Part of recovery, you know, a big thing is building value in your life. You know, it's like people will say like, "Oh, it's not worth using anymore." Well, what do you have that's worthwhile when you're sober? To not, you know what I mean? Like just being not worth using isn't enough to have you not.
I don't understand what you're saying.
You have to build worth in your life elsewhere. What he was saying is that when he gets sober, his life sucks. So why not just, you know, use and be like a little broke and sick all the time, even though that sucks. It doesn't suck as much as being sober.
Well, I think that
I'm saying build value in your life and have worth.
I think it's funny because it's very much there's a word that I don't know what it is. I can't access right now, but it's like being a little sick and a little broke is one thing, but being sick constantly and broke all the time and having nothing for many years is another thing. It's like the beginning.
Yeah, but what I but. To me, the depravity and the consequences of using have always only been enough for me to stop temporarily. Because once I stop, even if I have some money and everything's all right, if I have that untreated baseline restlessness, irritable and discontentedness that accompanies untreated alcoholism, that to me is so much worse than that depravity you're talking about.
I'm just – that's not what I'm saying though. What I'm saying is it's like I know people who get clean – and they go to meetings and they get nothing from it and they don't enjoy being clean. And I know people who are using and are using miserably. I just think being clean, the happiness grows on you with time, and being miserable, the misery grows
on you.
Yeah,
he didn't give it a shot.
You know,
he didn't give enough time.
I also think like
it's well, the other thing is you stop and some people get the pink cloud, some people it turns around. For most of us, there's a part to be endured that sucks in the beginning.
Right. We have to call this guy now. Okay. I made a commitment.
Who is this guy?
This guy, his name is Garrett.
As an addict, you're honoring your commitments. Your yeah. word is your bond.
I do my best.
Yeah.
I wouldn't
his
go
name's
that
Gary.
Far.
Sorry, his name's Gary. What?
His name is Garrett.
Garrett.
And let's just have him. Let's see if he can explain who he is. I went to school with him.
Is he a drug addict?
He was. He's in recovery.
Is he recovered?
Well, let's find out. I'm very excited. I haven't talked to this guy in forever. He's a very mysterious figure to me, and I'll explain it when I get him on the phone.
Ooh, Nels from Texas wants to call in and ask if all men in recovery are pussies. Ask her if she can call in the next
hour? Long answer no, short answer yes,
I'll
with
say,
a but.
Can you call in sometime over the next couple hours?
You almost had a little thing with Nels. Are you happy you didn't have her come?
We'll talk about that when she
comes. Are you happy you didn't have her come now?
She's great. I still keep in contact with her.
You didn't answer the question.
She said, for real.
Why did she say for real?
Because I asked her to call in. She's surprised.
Okay, I'm trying to do this.
What are you doing, man? This is dead air.
Talk,
you're not
then.
Putting
What's
on
wrong
a good
you?
Show, man.
What are you
fumbling
what are you,
around and fucking up your phone? How much battery life do you have? 7%?
Chris, why don't you make something useful happen?
Answer me how much battery life you have.
It's really none of your fucking business. I like that.
Dave lives his life on 5%.
You don't know anything about my life. You don't know what anything about me. You really don't. You have no clue of how I conduct my life.
I know you better than you know yourself.
That's the reverse. I'm just too stupid to figure out how to call from a number here. So I got to write down a number.
You just push the number, copy it, it and it calls for you.
It's not doing that.
Dave's writing with this dry-ass marker. It's such a metaphor for his life. 2% on his battery. Writing with a marker that doesn't work.
You're an idiot. Your whole life is handed to you on a silver fucking platter.
You sound jealous.
You disgust me.
You sound jealous.
You're a disgusting. We're breaking my father's house right
You're
now.
Resentment.
You know, my father, like, he hates it when I yell at you. He gets all, I can imagine, he gets all sad.
Why?
And all. He hates it when I yell at you.
Why? Because you're being a bully. Please. You're a bully.
You're like a weird subversive bully. You're a fucking asshole. Gotta get it together. Just stay present here, okay?
Is he gonna answer?
Garrett?
Yes, is this David?
It is. What's going on?
None. What's going on, boss?
You tell me. I'm trying to explain who you are to my co-host, Chris, on the thing.
Hey, Garrett. What's up? It's Chris.
What's going on, Chris? How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I mean, you know, I'm the one and only, the legend, Sloppy Jones.
Sloppy Jones.
Sloppy Jones. He's like,
that?
When I got
remember
to
that nickname?
I do. I got to SUNY Purchase in 1994. I moved into a suite full of like criminal Dominicans, this weird actor, me and my roommate Zev, Zev's friend, and then in the corner room was Sloppy Jones Garrett and his strange roommate Paul. Garrett would wear like basketball jerseys. He had pink hair, orange hair, weird glasses. He'd walk around with a lunchbox full of markers. He had a really hot little goth girlfriend. And he had been a junkie, but he was clean and living in this weed suite.
But why Sloppy Jones?
He was a rock star.
But what does that mean?
I don't know. Why Sloppy Jones?
Well, it was my nickname. And I had flunked out of Cobleskill University in 1990, and you know, my nickname became Sloppy because I loved to do, you know, I was really into doing LSD, but I was such an alcoholic that by the time the acid would wear off, I would be sloppy tripping, you know, totally drunk, stumbling around and tripping. So they would call me Sloppy or Slop, and the Jones came because I never had any money. And I was always jonesing for something, whether it was a cigarette or booze or whatever. So they started calling me Sloppy Jones, so I made it my stage name in my band. You know, back then, you know, in the 90s, stage names were the thing. You know, Slash, Axel, you know, everybody had a stage name, so that was mine. Except that wasn't famous.
That is a classic etymology. I love it.
Dude, Garrett was, if you had seen him, he was as famous as you could be without being famous at all.
Well, I was on the road of fame because I was sober in my early 20s, and then, you know, I can absolutely say that the reason I'm not famous today was because I picked up alcohol and started drinking again, and everything went out the window. It was a total disaster, and, you know, I ended up back, you know, 10 years later sober, no fame, no fortune, and, you know, being a corporate slob.
So what happened? Were you ever on serious drugs back then before I met you?
No, you know, I knew pretty much at an early age that there was something different about my drinking and stuff. So, you know, I knew don't go near cocaine, don't go near smack. That would be over and done, you know? So I was like, you know, I love to smoke weed and I love drinking and, you know, I tried to really, even from like the early teens, like try and prolong my drinking career, and I ended up in AA in 19. So like my drug use was really basically smoking weed and then LSD, acid, mushrooms, stuff like that. So actually the story I was going to tell for your show had to do with my first experience with mescaline and acid.
Tell it.
Because,
let's hear it.
Yeah, it started off disastrously. I thought, like, going into it, I was 16, and I got it from, I got two hits of mescaline from this kid at work, I mean, from school, and they were two really little things. They were orange, and I thought, like, you know, what's the big deal? And me and my friend made a plan. He was going to come over with some weed, and we were going to drink in my basement and then try mescaline for the first time. And it was a Friday, and I got home from school. I had it, and, you know, so I just wanted to get it started. So I took one of the two and left. You know, the other one was for him. I thought maybe I'd feel drunk or stoned or something. And funny enough, like, I started rushing like it was going to start. I didn't know what was happening to me. And my job called me. I worked at a pet store. And they were like, oh, we need you to come in. So I was like, okay, no big deal. So I called my friend, and I was like, let's do it another time. And I took his. And this is the first time I ever did it. and I went into work at the pet store tripping on two hits of mescaline. And I was, hallucinations, visuals, everything. I mean, I was out of, I was ready. I was losing it. I was the cleaning guy, and like in the back, there was a whole refrigerator full of dead animals. And like,
you were the cleaning guy?
I was the cleaning guy.
Wait, the dead guy, animals.
Why were there dead animals in the back of the store, Garrett?
Well, when they would die, if they didn't sell them, like birds and hamsters and everything, we would put them in the freezer until the mortician would come. So I was tripping my face off, and they were rolling around in there, and like, it was dirty. So like the walls were dirty, and the smudges started looking like animals descending into hell. And I was flipping. And so, like I also had to be on the floor, and like once in a while, we had good traffic back then. Well, back then everybody went to the mall, and I'll never forget, if people wanted to see the dogs, they would say, go get me that dog. You'd bring them out of the cages and hand them to people. And, they would, most people just wanted to hold the dogs, but I was tripping face, and this lady, she was definitely probably pushing 300 pounds, this black lady with a real Southern accent.
Yeah.
She grabbed me and she was like, "Woo, yo, son, go get me that white fluffy dog." I was tripping out. I went in there and I got, it was a Samoy, big white fluffy dog. And I handed it to the lady, and I don't know if I was hallucinating or she was just a wacky lady, and she was like, cradling the dog, rocking back and forth, being like, "Oh, I want me one of these white fluffy dogs, mister." And I started thinking that she like wanted me to be the dog, and I was so freaked out, dude. And so really I thought I was losing my mind. And lucky enough, I guess one of the people I worked with called my friend, because we were all kind of friends that I worked with. I didn't want to tell him what I did. But, called one of my friends, and, he called me, and, they were like, "You got a phone call." And I picked up the phone, and he started going, "Hello, hello, 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 hello. Garrett, what's going on? What's going on?" I was like, "Oh, my God, I'm losing my mind." I started crying in the bed store. And he was like, "Oh, calm down, man. You're totally tripping out." And he came, and he, like, he talked, we went out back and we talked, and he's like, "We're going to go to a party, and I was like, "Okay, maybe I'll have some time to let this stuff wear off." And back then, you used to just go to a dead end street and they'd have keggers and stuff.
Right.
And, a couple of the guys that I worked with were, they were into like hardcore music, and, they were, shaved heads, combat boots and everything. And like, they were like, "Okay, we'll take you to this party." They knew what was going on. And so they came back in their hardcore gear with their shaved heads. And, like, I really thought they were, like, Nazi guys. I totally, totally didn't realize they were my friends anymore. Like, I was kind of losing my mind. And they were like, "Come on, we're taking you to a, we're taking you to a party." I'm like, "Oh, my God, you guys..." They had to basically wrestle me in the car, and I really thought they were going to kill me because I had a necklace that was, like a Rasta. I was into, like, reggae music and stuff.
Yeah.
And I thought they were going to kill me because I was wearing a Rasta necklace, and they took me to this kegger. It was, like, in this open field, and I was running through, they were chasing me through the woods and stuff, and I was tripping out. They finally corralled me and, like, took me back to my house, and basically my brother, he's the godsend. He had friends that were took the walk of life too, and like he kind of talked me down, and like I just like laid on the floor basically for hours curled up, and so that was my first experience with LSD or mescaline. And of course you would think, such a horrible trip, like I would never do it again. Right? But of course I had plenty of other ones in my day. So, honestly, I was never into the, the smack or the crack or the heavy stuff like that. But, I basically, I was like really just trying to hang in there and have fun, but, you know, it just was one thing after another that just got me back to the rooms. And
I always think the best, I mean, the heroin stories and meth and cocaine, like, they're depraved. The best stories are always hallucinogenic stories.
Because they always involve, like, thinking something differently yeah. than really what's happening.
They're so good.
Yeah.
But when I got to Purchase, fucking Garrett lived in our suite. He lived across the hall. And I knew, like, the first time that me and him talked, that this was a very special person. Yeah. Okay? You're a very special person. And I was just so fucking stupid. You know, I was just such a stoner. And like, me and my roommate were driving to Central Park and buying sheets of acid and selling it. You know, we were selling acid. And I would hang out with Garrett, like, at the end of the night. It's like, if my life was Home Improvement, like, Garrett was Wilson. Yeah. He would, like, stand on the other side of the fence and talk me through this or that.
Yeah.
And I can only, if I had been sober, I think we would have had a lot more fun.
Well, Dave, that was the thing is, you know, I lived so vicariously through you, you know, because, like you said, I had a girlfriend and you were a single guy. So, like, your hijinks with the dancers and the this and the that were, like, fun for me to listen to. And then, like, yes, you would come in and you would tell us your problems. And, like, you made me grateful that I wasn't doing that. I was like, well, I'm doing the right thing. I didn't end up like Dave in this situation and that situation. So
that's true.
I really adored you, man. You were a real, like, I enjoyed the time we spent together. It was a great year, you know?
It really was.
Entertaining and it kept you sober.
Yeah, it really did, you know, and it was a place, like Dave said, where, like, you know, the guys next door were drug dealers and, like, they hated me for whatever reason, whether it was because I was a freak punk rocker, you know, whatever, you know, like, or, you know, but it was the Land of Misfits toys. That's why they were the ones that stood out. You know, like, just because I wore a skirt and, you know, pigtails and a carried lunch bag didn't mean that I was different there. I was the norm, and they hated me for some, whatever reason.
They were insane.
And I remember one.
They had problems, those kids. They did.
They did, and I know. Like, one time it came up, one of the guys, I would never forget it, because me and Paul, he used to laugh about it all the time. Like, you know, it was a morning, and, you know, like, he came up, one of the guys came up to me, and he was like, you know, they were from Riverdale, right?
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm just going to cap you, Uptown style. And I'm like,
Uptown style?
Uptown style. Right. You know, like, that's your hard come on. You come at me, you're going to cap me Uptown style? Like, what is that, with a cap gun? You know? They were ridiculous, man.
Tell Chris the story of your roommate, though, because that's a fucked up story.
Well, yeah, he was, you know, and that was the thing, you know, like, you know, I definitely learned it through him. You know, he was one of those guys that, like, you couldn't pick him out in the crowd. You know, he always wore a baseball cap. He was always very subdued and, like, didn't want to stand out. But he talked to me and Dave, you know, like, he liked you, Dave, and, like, he liked to talk to you, but, like, not many other people, like, you know, even the Zever, man, you know, who doesn't like Zev? And, you know, like, he would talk smack about Zev after he left the room, and I'd be like, oh, he's a cool guy, you know? But, you know, I don't know if it had to do a lot with, you know, he had a boyfriend for a little while, and, like, they had a falling out, and, you know, like, that type of thing. But he really went off the deep end, and, you know, he got these pets. You know, one day, you know, he's always into something, whether it was his cocaine binge for a week or, you know, something strange.
But I always thought he was like, I thought he was like he had never done drugs. And then in that year, he had like, he took acid from us. He would spend the whole night in my room playing SimCity on my computer. And then he would just take acid every day. And then one time he got coke, he started doing it every day.
Yeah.
And by the end of the semester, he was a shell of a human. It was sad.
You're exactly right. He did nothing wrong. Never did drugs, never drank. He didn't smoke, you know, and like, he started smoking because I smoked, and he didn't really inhale, and it was very strange. But, like, you're right, he never did anything out of the ordinary. But, you know, he got these gerbils, and this is why he got these gerbils, and they were his pets. And, you know, it was all right. You know, he tr- treated them okay and everything. And then, you know, every once in a while, you know, like, he'd be like, oh, yeah. I'm like, what? You had five gerbils. How come there's only, oh, one died. And, you know, like, then it went down to three. Then it went down to two. Then it went back to five. And it went back to, and, you know, I didn't think anything really of it, you know. But he went into this, like, I don't know. He went into a weird, a downward spiral. And it was all in good fun, honestly.
Wait, like, wait, what the fuck happened to the gerbils? Do you know what was happening to them?
Well, that's what I'm getting to.
Okay.
Because I think he, honestly, in my heart of hearts, as much as I liked Paul, I really do think he's a serial killer. Because later, you know, these gerbils were disappearing and coming back, and there was one other really, really outstandingly good-looking young man who was like a rocker guy, and I remember he was there that day, and they were both kind of like goofing around, and you know, I don't know if he went into the cage and killed the gerbil, or the gerbil was sincerely dead, but long story short, Paul basically chopped the head off of the gerbil, crazy glued it to the front of our door, and crazy glued a cigarette into his mouth. Do you remember that?
No, it's coming back to me. I think
How do you forget something?
I blocked that kind of thing out. I don't remember. I remember seeing it, and we went to art. We went to an art school, so it just seemed like an arty thing. But I didn't realize that he actually executed the gerbil, and I didn't think about that aspect of it. Garrett, what did you study there?
I studied English literature.
Right.
Between the gerbil massacres, the drug dealers, and your prolific drug use, you're not really selling SUNY Purchase.
Oh, it was a good time. It was a good time.
Yeah, it was a good time. I played in bands. You know, I got to beat the guys from the Negative Hate, and I played with those characters. And, you know, but long story short, that, you know, like, that little mounted, it was almost like a trophy, you know, like hunters put their trophies on the wall. That got him kicked out of school.
He got kicked out of school for that?
Yes, he got kicked out of school for that. And, you know, he had to go see the school psychiatrist.
Well, he was very antisocial. He had an antisocial whatever you call it.
That is, like, that's one of the, like, criteria for people who have antisocial personality disorder. Like, one of the things they ask is, like, do you fuck with animals?
Yeah, exactly. So it started to fall into place. Was like, maybe this guy is sincerely a serial killer or something. But, and you know, like I said to you on the old computer there, that, like, I've tried to track him down just out of interest, just to say hello, because he liked me. We got along so well, and I can't find him anywhere in the world. He is, like,
I've tried to track him down, man. But there's something also. Yeah. I had a buddy in high school who was not like Paul, but he was like Paul because he was gay, and he was, like, not out gay. And I can't find him either. I think that something happens with gay people who aren't comfortable being out, and they don't want to be out in public, like, in any way.
It's so weird, though, because you never think of a gay person being a serial killer.
Huh.
But that, too, I really question his sexuality. Like, I don't know that he was gay either. You know, like, you know, it was a very, you know, I think he was happy to have somebody that kind of understood him, but, like, all the horsing around that went on, I don't know if he was really gay, straight, or anything, honestly. It could be that he was just a serial killer and liked murder, you know?
Stop it. You don't know that he was a serial killer. Paul could have a really nice life someplace right now. But let me ask you something more important. I mean, I would love to hear your memories about Purchase and us and everything. But I think for the listeners, I think it's more important. How did you wind up relapsing? What happened?
Well, you know, and I really thought, you know, it was one of those where I had gone through almost all those problems in life. You know, I've been to weddings, and I got that beautiful gothic girl that you were talking about broke up with me, and I was heartbroken.
What was her name?
What's her name?
Yeah, I forgot.
Naomi.
Oh, yeah, Naomi.
Remember?
Yeah, yeah.
Such a wonderful person.
She was.
She really is. Yeah. It wasn't her. It was just the time.
She was. Well, you were young. So she was a teenager or something.
Yeah. Well, we were both. I was maybe 2 or 3 years older than her, but it was, you know, we were in our 20s, and you know, it just didn't work out.
She might have been 20 years old or something. She was young. You know what I mean? It's like, well, I mean, the odds of something like that working out are so slim.
Very slim at
that age.
Yeah, very slim. But, you know, I got through that sober, and I got through maybe even another breakup sober and weddings, and I went through most of that. What got me, Dave, was I had pinched a nerve in my neck. And you hear this a lot in the rooms, is I pinched a nerve in my neck, and I went to a chiropractor. You know, I was going to meetings, and I was trying to do it, and I was trying to get through that pain, and I couldn't. You know, and I, long story short, my father, who had his own issues with, you know, pain pills and all that. He had, you know, bottles and bottles of Dilaudid and Vicodin and, you know, all that shit. Because he was in, you know, he had back pain and such. You know, he came to me and he was like, look, you've been sober for 6 years. Why don't I have Tylenol or codeine? Why don't you just take one? And, I, you know, I've been weeks, maybe even months of this pain in my neck. And I said, all right, he gave me this bottle. It had probably about, I want to say, like 50 pills. And like one turned into two, turned into five, turned into 10, turned into like, I, you know, I was constipated for days of, you know, like taking these. And I was like, look, if I don't drink, I think I'm going to kill myself with these pills. Next thing I knew, I was drinking again, you know. And I was like, you know, I had had 6 years. I had sponsored people. I'd gone through the steps and things. And, you know, I thought like, well, you know, I'll just go back and I'll be fine. I'll get sober again. And 10 years later and a bunch of trouble and all kinds of stuff happened. And, you know, I could not get sober. You know, like I kept going back to the rooms and I'd relapse. And it was a horror show. You know, so many stories of, you know, and funny to take it full circle, you know, when I picked up the alcohol, you know, I was like, well, I'm going to smoke pot, I'm going to drink, and that's it, you know. And I was living over in Rockland with the guys from the band who, they did smack, they did heroin, they did stuff. There was a zoo. It was like, the house looked like the house in Fight Club that those guys lived in. It was disgusting.
Yeah. Right.
And I was, you know, drinking my bottle of wine, went into a blackout, and the next thing I knew, I came to and I was tripping. And I was like, oh my God, and there was like 10 people in my room, like girls with no shirt on, dancing, and I was like, oh my God, what the hell's going on here? And they were like, oh yeah, we gave you acid. You know, like when you drink, I mean, when you take acid, you could drink like a fish, and I came to like tripping.
Yeah. You know? Dude, I had that happen all the time. Same thing. What? Keep going.
You did the same thing?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so the funny part of the story was, you know, these guys that I met in Purchase, they knew me from being sober. And they in Purchase, they used to say, you know, like after band practice, like, ah, why don't you just have one drink? Why don't you have a beer? Come on, you know, why not? You're in college. And I was like, no, you don't understand. And I kept saying that and saying that. Well, now, spin it forward, they actually had an intervention. These smackhead, crackhead fools sat me down. After I was only active again for like a month or two, and they were like, you know, dude, you got to stop, man. And I was like, what, are you kidding me? I just got started again. And I, you know, they had given it a spin forward a few months. Those guys kicked me out of the band for drinking too much. And, you know, those things, it just snowballed. You know, I was looking at getting fired from my corporate job and, you know, like...
Were you corporate then, Garrett?
Yes, I had a job. I worked for a furniture company in a corporate headquarters. And, like, it was, you know, account rep by morning and death metal star by
You have
night.
To understand,
Bobby
Chris.
Jones.
This guy, he described it. He would wear a skirt and pigtails with a green lunchbox, the hottest girlfriend in the world, you know, like skipping around, maniac. He talks like Buster Poindexter. He played bass. You know, he's a lunatic. And then, you know, 30 years or whatever, 20 years later, I'm like, oh, yeah, whatever happened to Garrett? And I go on Facebook and I look him up. He's got short hair. He's in a cubicle with cat pictures in the cubicle. I'm like, what the fuck happened?
I know. Well, that should teach all your young listeners to stay sober or you're going to end up being in a cubicle form.
No, but you seem thrilled. You seem like a happy camper. You know,
I am. I'm grateful and I'm happy. But, Dave, I should be a rock star.
Dude, me too.
Because of the drinking.
Dude, I had a fucking...
I know, you should be too.
I had a deal. I was on fucking TV, and I as soon as I got a deal, I wound up doing heroin. Like, I did heroin that one time in Purchase in his room.
My God.
And he was like, Garrett was like, you're an idiot. He's like, what are you doing? And I was like, big deal. And then I said to Garrett, I'm never going to do it again. I had a three... Here, please, what are you going to say?
I'll never forget what you said. Do you remember? You were like... No, it's way too decadent for me. I'm never going to do it again. And you were like, you're a decadent guy. You would love it. And I was like, I know. We had that conversation. I remember it as clear as day, Dave. You were like, I'm never doing it again. And I really believed you. You know, I thought you were one of those guys, like, and I think even in the rooms I mentioned it where I was like, you know, I had a friend in college, you know, he did heroin once, you know, and he, you know, he's different.
But it's so funny because I became the total cliche. I lost my whole life to it, too, and now I'm a fucking waiter. You see that? It's fucking ridiculous. So, yeah, all the listeners, beware. Beware.
Yeah.
But, Garrett, I knew that you'd be a joy to have on the show, and it's so good to hear your voice. So, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's any opportunity, man. I wish I was still living in New York. I'd love to see you, but, you know, yeah, thank you for – it was great to hear your voice, man.
So let's I'll be in touch though. It's too good to have you at my fingertips like this. So
yeah, man. And if I'm in New York, I'll try and catch you. I'll try and drag you down.
Please do. If you're ever in New York, you let me know, and we'll go get coffee and go to a meeting.
Yeah, we have a bunch of old farts.
Do you go to meetings still?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I love them. You know, I one of the things that you know I got to the point where. Yes, you need it. You need it to survive. Then it's like you got to do it. Now I just enjoy it. It's my social. You know, I love people and I love the whole thing that it. Everything about it. So I love it. I look forward to it, and it's an incredible gift. You know, from God, I believe. You know, but
there it is.
There it is.
Love you, Garrett.
Thanks, Garrett.
I love you, man. Hey, you guys, take care and good luck with this thing.
Thanks, bud. We'll talk soon.
Alrighty.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
He was great.
I told you he'd be great.
He was great. But that's just my thing. You get some drug addicts on here, they tell great shit.
Yeah, he's really an alcoholic, I guess.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, I loved it.
It
was a step in memory lane, too, for you.
Oh, yeah. That story about
it. I didn't know. You never told me that you did heroin once in college and then said you'd never do it again.
I told the story on Dopey.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh.
You sniffed
it.
The story was... You remember that guy who came on the show, Jason? He brought me and my roommate Zev dope. He was like this junkie rock star. He was in a big band in the 90s.
Yeah, I know.
And he came through with this dope, and I was just like, sure, I'll try it. And I got really high. I hooked up with this ugly chick. I woke up with her in the morning.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not going to do that again. I was throwing up, blah, 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 blah. I told Garrett I wasn't going to do it again. And I was also a stoner, like stoner. So I was just like, I'd rather smoke weed every day.
Yeah.
And I never went back. And I tripped here and there and I smoked weed. And then, I don't know, as soon as there was coke in my life, I wanted to do whatever I can to not feel up on coke. Yeah. And I just wound up on heroin.
Yeah. All right.
Does that make sense? Really, really with the heroin, for me, it was like my anxiety. I was so nervous about my job and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was so nervous about being the center of attention that the dope really calmed me down for that.
Yeah. Well, the dope is the antithesis of your personality, so you get more of an effect from it, which is the theory on what your drugs of choice are. If you're a super chilled out type of guy, sometimes, and this isn't always true, but sometimes you like uppers more because it's a big swing. Whereas you're already neurotic, so you like
to go down. And I'm also up.
And you like to go down.
I'm so
up. It's like more of an effect for you, because it's a bigger swing.
But it's also like, I mean, I cannot imagine what it's like to be a quiet person who takes coke and they're finally themselves. Because I'm totally loud. I talk to strangers. I talk to people incessantly. Yeah. So when I get to do downers, it's literally a vacation.
Yeah.
You know, it's like literally a relief.
But how about tripping on mescaline and having a refrigerator full of dead animals? That would fuck with me.
Just that I can totally imagine the black lady part.
Sick. The Samoyed, too.
That's just God right there.
That's God. That's God shot. Yeah. Yes.
Stay sober
and this stuff happens.
That's the closest thing to a God shot I've ever seen.
Samoyed is the type of dog that I'm currently cohabitating with.
And we were making fun of it last episode. And I've never even heard the word Samoyed before
I never knew what it was until I met
Sammy. And then he's like, you know, Samoyed.
Yeah.
That's the closest to God I've ever been right there. That's a joke, God. I'm just playing.
Yeah.
Fucking that thing, what you said about, like, tripping being the best stories, it's because they're the funniest. Because, like, white dog, big fat black lady's hands, and you think you're the dog. It's like, that's the classic psychedelic thing. It's like me thinking my friends were gay because we're asking for bong hits. You know, it's like that crazy psychedelic misunderstanding. Because you really believe it in that moment.
Yeah.
You're like so stretched out.
I just always thought I was God.
Yeah, I never thought that.
Yeah. I really believed it.
But that's why you have serious mental illness. Severe mental illness.
I pissed my bed because I was God. I was laying in bed and I had to pee. And I said, why do I have to go to the bathroom?
God doesn't go to the bathroom.
I didn't think I was God. I thought I was Jesus, which I guess is God. And I was like, I'm Jesus. So I just pissed my bed. And then I never told you this. And then I got up and I was just in my boxers and they're all wet. And I was like, I need to go tell my mom and dad that I'm Jesus.
We have a whole episode called The Time I Thought I Was Jesus.
Oh, the time I pissed my pants. Yeah. Yes. Do you remember why I didn't tell my parents?
Because they would have known you were on drugs if you said you were Jesus.
So, and what my thought process was?
It's better to be Jesus and have them not know.
No, I'll tell them I'm Jesus when I'm not on drugs.
Right.
Because they'll know that I'm just mistakenly saying... They'll think I'm mistakenly saying it because of the drugs, so I'll wait for the drugs to wear off, and then I'll let them know I'm Jesus.
The best part is that the logic of that still resides in you right now. You're sitting here with this air of like, that was so logical, and it made so much sense.
Well, it's back to what Randy said in the last episode, is everybody has a piece of divinity in them, and they have to share it.
It comes straight out of Jesus. And I don't have a piece. See, that was the thing about what Randy said. I don't feel like I have a piece of divinity.
Do have a piece of divinity. I can tell you. I can see it.
I don't. I think
the Jesus in me sees it in you.
Jesus doesn't live in me.
Yes, it does. Jesus is just a man who was really in touch with his divinity.
Listen, I love Jesus. And if there's one thing I know about Jesus, Jesus prefers us to share in church of other drugs.
And he's the first son of God?
If God had a son, if God impregnated Mary, then yes, Jesus was his son.
He immaculately conceived. She did.
The joy of this for me
is
that you believe this, but you don't actually believe it. You're like fucking with me and all of the Christian dopey nation out there by acting as though you believe that.
What do you mean? I believe it at all. Reconciliation, transubstantiation.
I don't think you believe in a stitch of it.
A stitch of it, huh? What are you going to be playing music now? Play the intro song.
That's it.
That's the intro song?
Yeah,
was it an electric guitar?
Did you see an electric guitar?
No, I
can't play the both parts at the same time.
In the intro, was it an electric guitar? Because it sounds much better.
You think it sounds better than that?
That's the intro? It doesn't even sound like it. That's not the intro.
It's the intro. Play the intro. And it goes, if I'm not home, I'm out walking around. You might feel a little sick, and it might be time to play that trick. And if I'm not home, I might be letting you down. Yeah, further on down the road, no one's sure what'll unfold.
Wait, stop. I'm gonna 10 seconds and then you're going to play it. All right, let's hear the comparison. You ready? Hold on. Fuck. Hold on, let me turn the volume up. Sorry, Dopey Nation. Here we go.
Who's rocking out there?
Okay, now you play it. That sounds so much better than, like, a guitar. Right? It just doesn't even sound like the same thing.
Well, the truth is...
Do you have one of those whammy pedals?
I didn't play that.
Oh, you didn't? Who played that?
That was this guy, I don't remember his name. My friend Justin won't remember his name. It was, he's made... I can't remember his name. Tim and this guy who's a great guitar player. But I wrote it, and then we played it as a band. And on that version, I just did this.
I like that on the acoustic.
But it's a real junky song. He goes, if I'm not home, I'm out walking around. I feel a little sick, and it might be time to play that trick. And if I'm not home, I could be letting you down. Yeah, further on down the road, no one's sure what'll unfold.
Songs related to drugs somehow.
Home, I might be painting the town a really nice shade of green, a shade of things that you've never seen. And if I'm not home, I don't remember the last verse. I might be not painting the town. Oh, I'm out defending the crown.
What does that mean?
Giving it all I got. I'm doing my best to stay on top.
It's good.
That song
what
was...
What is defending the crown?
That's what, like...
Rhymed with painting the town?
No, it did. It did rhyme well. No, it's like in Lord of the Rings. They're defending the crown of Rohan by going to battle. They're defending the crown.
But describe that in real life terms.
Well, if you really want to know... The whole song is about copping.
Yeah.
If I'm not home, I'm out walking around.
Yeah, I get that.
So if I'm out defending the crown is my drug use. And by defending it, I'm scoring drugs.
Okay. All right.
How's that?
I'm not totally seeing the connection, but I'll buy it.
I want you to play the version. That version is so good that I have on that song. Play it at the end of the show. I never can play
the
that
full,
song.
Not yeah. home. I have yeah. the full on my computer.
Yeah, it's good.
All right. Should I read the review of the week and we're going to wrap this up?
Where are we at?
We're almost done. 53.
53? We gotta do something else.
No, we're gonna play the song and put the intro and it'll be good.
Shorty?
Yeah. Alright, so, you love this one.
It's so short, though.
It's so combative, though.
Combative. Combative.
Combative. Yeah. Combative.
Combative.
It really activates my people-pleasing. Alright, so the...
Why don't we talk about that for a second?
The review...
How does my way impact your people-pleasingness?
Well, like, we got into it, I mean, for instance, me and Annie, okay? So she has the Samoyed we keep referencing, and you can't have dogs over 40 pounds. And Sammy's 55 or 50 pounds. He looks like he's 90 pounds because he's a big fluff ball.
He's clearly over 40 pounds.
Yeah, and so they said something to her, and Annie has a note that says he is a service dog. And... This is what the note says. It's from her psychiatrist. So the woman said something and went and spoke to the building manager.
She only hates service dogs. And so I've got problems.
I said, you know, Annie's dog. I was like, actually, she's an emotional support dog. And she said, well, I need to see the paperwork for it. So Annie gives me this note. It's from her psychiatrist. It says, to whom it may concern, Annie has an emotional support dog. And then it says the dog, the thing. Or something like that. It's literally like a half a sentence. Mm-hmm. And it's the biggest piece of shit. No. You know what I mean? It's so tiny. Mm-hmm. And I'm such a people pleaser. I go in and I'm also just like,
an idiot. So I hand it to her, and I have this stupid smile on my face. And she's kind of just like, what is this? And I guess, actually, and I found it on mass.gov, that is sufficient for an emotional supporter. That's all you technically need. And she's like, you need some other certificate. But then Annie's like, gets super reared up. She's like ferocious, you know, she's South American, and she gets like, you know, gets into it. And she's like, that's all you need, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, my people pleasing is like, just let me handle it. Do you know what I mean? Because every time I see the woman, I'm like super nice to her. And it's just like, I just don't want to have an argument and then have to see her every day. You know what I mean? It's like, I'll handle it much differently than something else, which is full circle to this review. Because I don't even like reading it, because I feel like it's just creating this combative.
You didn't like this review?
No, I liked it. I just don't want to put it on Front Street.
Well, what are you reading it for then?
Because you like it.
I love it.
Bread and butter. So this review says,
I just want to say this before you read the review. My thing, though, is to be, I like to be combative, or combative is the word, but I also like reconciliation. And I feel like a relationship once reconciled is a much stronger relationship than a relationship that never went to war.
What, like drunk, like Irish guys get in a fight in a bar and then they're best friends after?
I'm not Irish and I've never been in a bar fight.
But you know that cliche. More like, you know that stereotype.
I know that you and I, when we fight in our, and reconcile, we're closer for it.
We have great makeup sex.
We're closer for it. Are we not closer for it?
Yeah, of course.
But and you refuse to even know somebody well enough to get into a fight with
them. What's her name? Annie actually says that about me. I get soup whenever we, and she's stubborn and I can be stubborn, and we get in fights and I get like, we get in fights to the fact that I don't want to get in a fight and I want to avoid everything. And she's like, that's what a relationship is. You argue and stuff. And I'm like, I just want to never argue and peacefully go about my life. But that's not realistic.
It's not real.
It's not real. It's not real. All right, let's read this fucking review. So the review is from GamePlayer010101.
Yes, hi.
The subject is Yup.
Yup.
And the message is better than Cher and that sober guy combined. Ha ha.
Aha.
Aha.
Listen, I'm not saying that we're better than anybody.
No, they're both better than us. They do real recovery work. We just kick it old school. Dopey style.
What's wrong with you?
What do you mean?
I'm not saying we're better than anybody, except we're probably better than that sober guy. And I know Omar thinks he's better than us.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're both doing fine work. I just happen to think that we probably have the best podcast out there. So, I mean, I'm not even joking. Mark Maron and fucking Artie and Anthony. There's only one broadcaster who I dare not say that we're better than. And that's Howard Stern. I want to say this before we finish. I stopped listening to Howard, you know, a while ago. Because I didn't want to pay for it. And I got annoyed with the show.
Yeah.
But the other day, John Stewart was on the Stern Show, and it was a free listen. And one of our listeners actually gave me his login to Sirius to listen for free whenever I want. So thank you. Yeah. He's going to come on soon, I think.
Yeah.
But I listened to this John Stewart interview, and Howard is just the greatest.
Yeah.
Just what he does.
Yeah.
He hangs out. He's smart. He's funny. He's revealing. He's sensitive. He's just so good. And I could only wish that our show could be a fraction as good as Howard.
There you go.
I love him.
All right. And with that, I think we'll wrap it up.
Do you not like Howard?
I don't really listen to him. I watched Private Parts. And
did you like it?
It was okay.
All right. Stay strong, my brothers and sisters in and out of the nation.
And toodles.